I am Paige Albiniak, editorial director of Promax BDA, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. Today, we're taking a quick trip to Sydney, Australia, where Daily Brief contributor Kareem Taylor addressed Promax BDA ANZ and its annual conference titled Memory Makers on October 27th and 28th. In this talk, Kareem, a graduate of Promax BDA's Promo Pathway program, tells us a bit of his personal story, from growing up in Brooklyn to moving to Los Angeles to trying to make it as a voiceover actor. He then discusses how marketers today can develop the vision to tell the stories that will attract audiences to your content. Marketers no longer need to worry about attracting mass audiences. In today's fragmented environment, that might not even be possible. Instead, Kareem posits, marketers need to create content that will bring the right audiences, the engaged fans, the fanatical viewers. Let's travel to Sydney and hang out with Kareem for a bit.
I believe that we've reached the end of an era. And it always happens this way with organizations like this Promax, whoever it is, they bring together a bunch of us to talk about where we are now, because obviously things have changed. Budgets is dwindling. Things are moving around. Audiences are moving elsewhere. Phones are getting smaller and smaller. And now, all of a sudden, you don't have the control anymore like you used to. Or maybe your colleagues, or maybe the hires. And so now there's an opportunity to actually create something that people can enjoy on devices that they would like to enjoy it on. But how do we do that? So for the last 3 years, I've been obsessed with this. How do you get your life together? I'm not judging you, I'm just saying. When I talk about get your life, I've been fascinated and obsessed with this idea of what makes us create the kind of work that we're capable of creating. How do we start to put these ideas or thoughts that we have in our head or in our phones, how do we start taking that to work with us? And I've been obsessed with that. That's all I care about. People think I'm weird. That's all I care about. And so the last 3 years, I've been interviewing people. So in LA, I blog for Promax Media, Daily Brief, and I talked to a lot of executives, creatives, all types of people about where'd you come from? Why do you think the way you think? What do you read? How did you create this piece of work? What's going on in your life? Where are you from? And that's what I do. And I've been learning so much about all these people. I'm like, I want to come and share what I've learned. You can find that at brief.promaxmedia.org. That's where all the interviews are. This is just a cheap plug. I want you to know about this. I really want you to be able to keep in touch with me after this. I want you to understand the world that I'm living in, and hopefully maybe we can even talk on the podcast. But first, a little bit about me. I've always been sort of a rule breaker, right? I'm just sitting on a kitchen table. That's pretty weird. That's pretty, like, obnoxious. I shouldn't be doing that. That's where we eat ketchup bottles next to me. It's a wine glass. It was weird. But I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. Actually, a couple blocks away from Notorious B.I.G. You might know Notorious B.I.G.? Biggie Smalls? And where I'm from, I was living with my aunt for about 7 years before I actually met my biological mother. And I always kind of felt just different. I never matched. I wore different color socks. And I always just felt kind of weird. Does anyone even think they're weird? Okay. To be honest, you know you're aware when you're trying to explain what you do to your parents, and they're like, huh? What? So let's keep it real here, okay? We've got some pretty weird jobs, all of us. And so, growing up a little bit, my mentor always told me that I had to get a job that I didn't want to do. Like, that was the way that I would earn my stripes. That's the way that I would pay my dues. That's the way that I would sort of have something to even talk about one day. And so I got a job at this factory. Oh, this is not a picture of me at the factory. Okay. So I got a job at a factory in South Carolina, a little small town, and I was taking tires, airport tires, airplane tires, truck tires, and stacking them on trucks, 53-foot trucks, all day, 14, 16, sometimes 18-hour days. And I would get paid probably about $30, $40 for the work that I did that day. And I was doing this job because I was about to go to college, I needed to save up. And my mentor told me I needed to pay my dues. But when I was here at the factory, I would meet a lot of different colleagues and people who would just do what they were told. We showed up every day, wore the same outfits, same uniforms. The boss would say, here's what you do, A, B, C, D. You go, you fill up the truck, you go home. But is that what we do for a living? Our jobs that we do now are a little bit more intricate. It takes a little bit more more brain power. There's not right or wrong. You can't just go and just, it's not as easy as filling up a truck. But I didn't know this anyway. I was doing this job. I knew I didn't want to do that. So when I went to college, that's when I decided I needed to do something a little bit more creative. So I created this website called Desk Duty Diaries. I was an RA when I was in college, and I was a guy in the dorm that people would call when, you know, there were girls in the dorm sneaking in, or someone was coming through the back door, or whatever, and I was that guy. So I was like, there needs to be a blog about this. There needs to be something to represent this on the internet. The internet was becoming a big thing. It was easy from GoDaddy.com to get just a $5 domain. So I spent my life savings, my $5 life savings, for my tire job, and I brought the domain, DestinyDiaries.com, because I thought that the internet was a thing. All my friends were using Facebook at the time. Everyone was on YouTube. And so I figured this was the best thing to do. But here's where it all went wrong. Because about 3,000 miles away, in a place called Silicon Valley, there were some dudes. Brian, the CEO of this company called Airbnb, they were building something with the same exact tools that I had. So they had the internet, but they had something that I didn't have. They saw something that I didn't see. And that's what's happening to a lot of us right now. There's some competitors seeing things that we don't see. Now, they saw something in the marketplace. They looked at it and said, what can we build with these tools? But also, what does the world need at this particular time? I felt like I missed out on about $40 billion. I don't know about you. But that's what happens when you miss the boat. It's a real thing because companies do go out of business. People do get shortlisted. Things happen when you do miss the boat. And I felt like I did. But today what I want to talk about, what I was brought here to talk about, is how do you start seeing? How do you see? How do you have vision to understand that the moment to create is now? And the way to do that, I can't tell you because it's a new presentation. You do that with you. Now you might say this sounds simple, but oftentimes when we show up to work, and I know because I've been doing this, we show up to work, we show up with a different personality. Sometimes maybe you don't feel comfortable, maybe you just, you're not ready to share what's on your mind. Maybe the ideas that you're bringing to the table, you don't feel comfortable speaking up. But today, I want to talk about you and how you can bring yourself to the table. The thing about TV marketing is that, marketing in general, is that it used to be very simple. In fact, when you used to go to the store, there's only a couple options, and you almost had to go to the store because they showed you the commercials. You almost had to watch the commercials because that was the only thing that was available. You almost had to sit in front of the TV because it's all you had to do. And so people who sold this stuff, they, of course, as with anything, they figured out the trends. They called it names. They called it 4 P's of marketing. They gave it all, put it in textbooks. We all learned this stuff. And then all of a sudden, the world got disrupted, and now I don't have to listen to you anymore. And so we came up with all these weird names and titles and things to describe the channels that we operate and the segments that we have. And we used them for a long time because they really did work, right? They really did work. It was things that you remember, right? Thank God it's Thursday. These are things that you might actually remember. But it worked for a long time, not anymore. There were times when people would sit in front of the screen, watch TV after a long day at work. It's just not a thing anymore. Because what is a long day at work? What is work? What are people doing now? What jobs do people have now? What are their lives like? So we're trying to market in a 1990s world in a 2017 world. And there's 3 new rules that have come about. And not for us, but the way that our consumers are actually consuming. Now, as consumers, we have control. Now we can curate. Who in here has a big camera roll in their phone? Camera rolls. Saves photos, videos. Right? You're curating your own thing. If you wanted to and had time, you wouldn't work all the time. You'd probably create a movie from the stuff that you've curated. I want to tell you this. And if I had to end my presentation right now, this is what I would actually leave you with. For a long time, we've been marketing to everybody. Now, we got the demos that we have to market to and things like that. But we've been trying to get every single person to tune in. If we can reach every single person, it's more likely that we'll actually get them as a number. But I'm here to tell you today, let's stop marketing to everyone. Let's start marketing to the few weird people. I always tell my friends, I'm like, if you sit all day watching cat videos, why do you think the people that you're selling to are doing something different? If the thing that you're entertained by and has your attention and has your time, no matter how crazy it seems, And that's the thing that you're into. What makes you think that the person is, that you're trying to market to is any different? Maybe they just want a cat video. I'm not saying produce cat videos. But let's consider the few, the weird. And I get this from a guy named Seth Godin. So Seth wrote this book called Tribes. And Tribes is about marketing to communities of people. Understanding what they like, of course, we know that, right? Understanding what they like, what they're into, what are they reading, what are they watching, what else are they spending their time in? We'll get into this a little bit later in terms of jobs, but what else are they spending their time in? So this idea has been popularized by Seth Godin, and it's one of the best pieces of literature on this topic because we can all learn how to reach all these weird communities. But here's the kicker. It's not the person next to you that's going to do this, it's you. It's you! You're the leader! So here's the thing, it happens all the time. Something's going on in the world during a particular generation, and someone comes along and decides to make a story out of it, right? Someone is seeing what's going on, and they decide to put context, language, nomenclature around the moment. And us, as memory makers, that's essentially our job. But it doesn't happen just out of thin air. It happens with someone deciding that they have to put something, they have to name this thing, right? Nelson Mandela didn't create this whole social justice movement. He didn't create it. He put a name to it. He put a face to it. He stood up and said, this is something I believe in. He showed up. Martin Luther King showed up. Steve Jobs showed up. People believe, and they'll go down in history, is maybe he created the MP3 player. He didn't create the MP3 player, he just made it a thing. He popularized it. That's exactly what we do. We don't create things out of thin air or try to be super original and create something that no one has ever seen before. We try to popularize something. I'm trying to provoke you right now to think about popularizing something that exists, not coming out of thin air with some originality, but it's not just them. It's Bob Marley. He didn't invent the Rastafarians. He just showed up, and so I'm going to lead them. Ray Kroc didn't invent the hamburger.
Like hamburgers. Delicious.
He didn't invent the hamburger, okay? It's personal. What do I mean by that? That
the thing you're making is going to require extreme personality. Why do we leave our personalities at home when we could bring them to work? Oftentimes when you hear someone about at their retirement speech, they're always talking about, for some reason, there's a lot of personality at the retirement speech. First time you've seen them smile in 30 years. First time you've seen them be excited and thank their mentors and kind of open up their personality a little bit. It's like, we never saw this side of you at work. Why not?
It's personal, but here's the thing. Ray Kroc didn't love hamburgers. Right? He's just like, the hamburger's good for what it is, but Steve Jobs just wasn't in love with MP3 players. You don't need to necessarily love the particular way, the particular thing that you're trying to articulate. You don't need to love that. You do have to love something about it. But the loving something about it part comes from being personal, finding something to attach yourself to. You need to love the story. You don't need to love the subject. You just need to love the story behind it, the human experience behind it. And then, you have to take matters into your own hands. You know what they say, the revolution will not be televised. Anybody heard that before? No? Just me? Okay. The revolution will not be televised, right? But it will be tweeted. Right? There's so many movements happening right now, and I think we're missing out on it. We don't involve ourselves in the conversations that are actually happening. It's real things, real communities that can be reached from all over. Solange didn't necessarily invent alternative R&B. She just decided, I'm just gonna show up and I'm gonna be the face of this movement. And all of a sudden, who knew that there were 1 million people out there who actually agreed with her point of view, her music? Who knew that they were all out there? The thing about culture is we have an opportunity to be a part of it and create it. And I don't know if we realize that responsibility, that it's us who decide what people believe. It's us, it's up to us to decide those beliefs. And Devon created this picture, he didn't know when he took this picture that was gonna end up on top. Time magazine during a time where in St. Louis where there were race riots and things were happening. He showed up with his camera, took a picture, ended up on Time magazine. He was just out there doing what he loved, bringing his voice to the party. And we all have that responsibility to bring our voice to the party. And it's not just that, it's hip hop. Anybody like hip hop? I felt it in the soul. Hip hop in the 1970s. I'm from Brooklyn, I'm from New York, so I know typically how this felt. I wasn't born in the 70s, but I was in the 90s, and I saw hip hop being a thing that I could relate to. So these guys, before I was even born, were in their own apartment creating something. They looked at the world and they said, you know what, our voice isn't out there. With all the music that was out in the 70s, I mean, just think about it. There was so much music out in the 70s. I mean, the world pretty much had what it needed. No one thought that hip-hop was a thing. Or, what is hip-hop? What is that, right? No, it was unknown to a lot of people. But these guys decided that they had a story to tell. Something happened in that building. What is this? It looks vintage now and something that we're familiar with in terms of beatboxing and dancing and hip-hop culture. It feels like it belongs now. But these were voices, things that did not exist. It was just a story that needed to be told. And I'm just trying to provoke you to tell that personal story. And the thing about it is you might say, but I'm weird. No one gets me. My sense of humor is weird, right? Because first it starts off like this, with just a couple people in the park, your friends, the people you follow on Twitter, or the people, you know, your mutual follows. First it's just that small community of jokes and banter in your group chats, right? And then all of a sudden, you thought it was just you. It starts becoming a phenomenon. Now all of a sudden hip hop is global force, commercial success, around the globe. Licensing, deals, everything. Hip hop is now all of a sudden a thing. It was just something small in the Bronx that they thought it was just them. But all of a sudden, other people are joining in on the fun. Other people are deciding that I resonate with that. As different and as weird as you thought it was, there are other people out there who want to be cool too. And that's okay, right? Because the thing about our weirdness is we'll all be surprised is that it resonates with other people. It crosses the lines. Who doesn't want to be cool? Who doesn't want to be bold? Who doesn't want to be sexy? I'm not trying to get in your business, I'm just saying.
Wow. Well, I guess I'll go to slide 63. Resemblance. Y'all know Issa Rae?
Yeah.
Anybody know Issa Rae?
So Issa Rae came out with this show in 2011 called Awkward Black Girl. Put it up on YouTube. 6 years later, now all of a sudden she has a show on HBO called Insecure. Now, when she came out with the Awkward Black Girl, they didn't know there were other awkward black girls out there that, you know, we're weird in conversation when it comes to guys, would fart when you're not supposed to, stuff like that, right? People are weird. We're weird. We do weird things. But who knew that there was an actual audience out there of people who wanted to see this stuff? They wanted to laugh at something weird. Now, the population's only growing, so the audiences are only growing, even though they appear to be getting smaller. But it's not like there's less people in the world now than there was before, that we can't engage these audiences. We have to find them in small communities, what we think to be small. My friend Jennifer Cho went to Kickstarter. She was at NYU Tisch School of Arts in New York, and she went to Kickstarter. She said, I need to raise $25,000 to finish my short film. Now, I thought she was crazy. I'm like, you know, $25,000. And then she asked me for money. I don't have money. Yeah, but my friend asked me for money. Like, nah, I don't have it right now. You know what I mean? And so, but Jennifer Cho, she surprised me because she had 247 people donate $5, $10, $50, $100. You do the math. I'm not getting that. 247 people. We're reaching audiences sometimes in the millions, sometimes maybe 600,000, 700,000, 800,000, you know, good night or something like that. And she only had 247 people to equal $25,000 for her short film. Small community, a very small community. And then you take that film and you bring it to the masses. But you have to first engage the small community. And it seems like it's small, but you need those weird people that like your thing. I always say it's for insiders only. It's the inside joke. My friend Theophilus London in Brooklyn, 2007, I ran to him and I said, "What's up, where are you going?" He's like, "I'm going to London." I'm like, "What's in London?" He's like, "Work." I'm like, "Well, who do you know in London?" "I don't know anybody. There's this DJ there that wants me to come out there." And he said, "We'll work together and we'll see what happens." So Theophilus was, when he was in Brooklyn, he had a couple demos out. He was kind of doing his thing, but he sounded like the hip hop that was out in New York. And if you know anything about anyone, and all of us are creatives, sometimes when things win awards, when something looks shiny and get attention, they always show up in our meetings as the reference. And we end up actually creating the reference. I know as a voiceover actor, every time a campaign is really big at an award show, I start reading scripts that sound all exactly like the campaign. I mean, it always happens. It's like a year long or 18 months. It's like the same particular script that I'm reading. Theophilus London was in New York, sounded like Jay-Z, a lot of different New York rappers. So he moved to London, developed this style, a weird style, but became more of himself. Because when you stop trying to copy the thing that's the most popular, all of a sudden you realize that there's some originality with you. In fact, the thing that you thought was weird is your competitive advantage. So now he's touring the world without a major label. Kanye West produced his last album, executive produced his last album. I mean, he's a weird dude. Insiders only, Jerry Springer. Right? Now, there's a lot of people who sit at home and they watch Jerry Springer. And I'm not saying they're weird. I'm just saying that every single idea that you have, and maybe you're even holding it back, is valuable. The thing that seems weird, out of control, in fact, maybe even obvious, is the thing that's going to hit. I love Kanye West because he put out this expensive shoe, I think it was like $900. I don't spend $900 on shoes, but some people do. And the beauty about some people is some people is not the 247 people, it's not just 25 people. Sometimes it's millions of people who are those some people. Now, of course, you do the small sample size, but some people will show up to buy the expensive shoe. Don't be afraid to be the person that sells an expensive shoe. Because possibly when you put that shoe on, maybe you have better conversations, maybe you feel more confident, right? Similar to a Nike shoe. Sometimes things change when you invest $900 in that shoe. I'm just trying to provoke you to think about how to be weird. It sounds weird, but I want you to be weird. I support you. Who are you going to be and how are you going to do it? This is my favorite question. Who are you going to be and how are you going to do it? We all have to make a decision. Either be like everybody else or be an outlier. I'm not just talking about, because the thing about memory is you can get someone's attention, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you become a memory. Does that make sense? So yeah, this person stands out, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're yet a memory. We're gonna get there, but you have to decide who you're gonna be. Either you're gonna be the big conglomerate corporation, 25,000 locations, or you're gonna be the coffee shop right down the street from my house. I'm not trying to tell y'all where I live. I'm just saying, Moby's is in my neighborhood. And that's the coffee shop I like going to because I feel like I'm weird. I feel like when I get my cup of coffee from Moby's, it's different. I don't know where the beans come from. But I feel good. I feel justified in my decision. I get a lot of writing done at that coffee shop. In fact, that coffee shop makes me more successful in life, right? Now, Moby's to me are the weird ones. Because when you see a company that has billions of dollars in funding and they can just pop up a shop, keep it open for 5 years without being profitable, why would you ever open up a coffee shop when your competitors can spend a lot of money and just blow it away? But you have to be weird and you have to understand who those people are who are gonna walk into that coffee shop. Does anybody have their coffee shop? Your thing?
your person. Doesn't it feel good? I don't know, I take pride in that. It's just me, Dex.
I love my culture.
I love it. What I'm trying to say is you have to decide. You're gonna be Airbnb, you're gonna be Marriott, whoever you're gonna be. You're gonna be the big conglomerate, you're gonna be the small people that decided to start something, you know, $40 billion in valuation is not small, but I'm just saying, you have to choose. And you cannot be afraid of being weird. Warby Parker looked at the competition and was like, well, why would we create another sunglass company? Sunglasses, I mean, who needs these? I mean, who needs this stuff? In fact, when they tried to get funding, they didn't even have a website. They weren't ready. And the person, Adam Grant, they went to Adam Grant, who was a professor at UPenn, at the Wharton, and they were trying to get money. They didn't have a website. They weren't even ready. So oftentimes, we think we have to be ready or prepared. How often do you, I had a friend of mine who told me he couldn't edit video until he got his MacBook Pro. And I said, well, if you didn't edit yet, the MacBook Pro isn't gonna make you a great editor, right? He had a laptop though, you could install some software. I'm just saying you don't need to wait until the whole thing is baked. Does that make sense? You don't have to wait until you have all the answers, but do you see it? Do you see the opportunity? Today, you have an opportunity while you're here actually at the conference. My friend, Tristan Walker, started this company called Bevel, and I'm bald, I don't know if you noticed, right? I'm bald, but I cut all my hair off about a decade ago, and I didn't want to, because I didn't want to be young with a bald head, but I did it anyway. And Tristan Walker saw something that I didn't see. Now, here's the thing. Tristan Walker, I experienced, I would walk into our convenience store looking for products for my head, in particular because my pores are different. I don't know if you know, but sometimes when we cut our hair, we get nits, and they don't make products for us. So sometimes you have to just deal with what's on the shelf. When you look all the way at the bottom of the shelf, there's the products for us, and it's dusty. You got to dust it off, and you don't buy it. Kind of sit there, the expiration date, the product, because they don't make products for us. Tristan Walker, Walker Company, came through, saw that, and was like, I could do something with this. This sounds personal to me. I could actually create a product for us, and I can get funding for it. So he went to Silicon Valley and raised millions of dollars for this weird thing that no one had bothered to invest millions of dollars in before, but all of a sudden he decided that he had a personal problem. And we have to make it a personal problem. We have to look and say, I understand that all of this stuff is here right now, but how can I add to the conversation? How can I really provide my voice to this thing? Fear is the thing that stops us from getting that out of our system. And I talk to so many entrepreneurs across the globe now who, and professionals, who feel like they can't get their ideas out into the world. Now, here's the thing. Remember that retirement party I was talking about? We're all gonna arrive there, and we're all gonna be in great shape. And the party's gonna be nice, the champagne's gonna be flowing. Cupcakes are gonna be great from the local bakery, right? The food's gonna be great. We're all gonna arrive there, the night's gonna go swell. The career would've been great. But in the back of your mind, you always wonder if you could have contributed something more, if you could have made a bigger contribution. Because you arrive there, you do arrive safely at the destination. It's just a matter of how you're going to feel, because at the end of the night, you're still going to have to go to sleep. I'm not trying to scare you, I'm just saying, what would you do if failure wasn't an option? If you knew that you could do that weird thing, put it out into the world, and you wouldn't fail, nobody would laugh at you. They probably will. You have to be okay with that. Right, Vanessa? This is just me. You have to be okay with that failure. Igor Stravinsky went to Paris 100 and something years ago. And he performed the riot spring. And he said, I'm going to try it. Caused a riot. People threw things. Fights broke out. What he was trying to do was very weird. What he was trying to bring to the world was very weird. Now, all of a sudden, we still remember this person as a legend, icon. Someone who's influenced the arts. People study his stuff. But when he was actually doing the work, people hated him for what he was trying to do. Because when you start breaking rules, people look at you with a side eye. You don't the side eye is, right? People look at you weird. Who are you to think that you can come here and change the rules or challenge the status quo? The weird thing about it is, those are the only people we remember, the troublemakers. But fear stops us from even getting to that point. I had an opportunity when I was a teenager in New York to meet this guy, Russell Simmons. I was part of this after-school program where they opened up the world to me. That's how I learned Photoshop and Final Cut Pro and became a weirdo. I take that pride out of it. I say that with pride, right? That's how I learned all these programs, and that's why I became a creative. But they gave us an opportunity to meet Russell Simmons, and it was like 15 of us in the room. And I got so scared that when it was time to go up and shake his hand, I went to the bathroom. I got out of there. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know how to approach him. He doesn't understand me. He's a big figure. Apparently, I needed a mentor, my other mentor said, and I was supposed to be Russell Simmons, and I just never did it because I was afraid. And when I work, oftentimes, and I talked with an executive on our podcast, we talked about this, where most people at work never ask for what they want. But some people that do, we never see these numbers because they don't talk about this with us, but some people that do actually end up getting what they want. And not just for compensation or anything like that, but with ideas, right? The thing about those ideas is that we're so afraid we never get them. Now, we'll do fine in our job and we'll return it the next year and the next year and the next year, but those groundbreaking ideas always come when you're not feeling that sense of fear. And I didn't talk to Russell Simmons, and I still don't know him to this day, and it eats me up inside, because that could have been my boy. You understand what I'm trying to say here? The Fugees. You know the Fugees? The Fugees came out in 92. They recorded their album in 92. They didn't come out until 94. At the time they were recording their album, I don't know. Was Dr. Dre out here? Dr. Dre, Snoop. So when they were coming out, they were creating this album with all that stuff on the radio. So it was like really big gangster rap. Gangs and just colors and violence. So the Fugees decided that they should create something that had that raunchiness to it. And when they dropped their album, Blood and Our Reality, in 94, it was crickets. Their label should have dropped them. In fact, their label was about to drop them. And right before they came out with this second album, there was an album they were working on, but right before this, they started doing interviews. Their label was about to drop them. And Lauryn Hill did an interview and she said, "This time around, we're going to use all our skills. We're going to sing, we're going to rap, we're going to dance. We're just going to use all our Fugees." That's what she said in an interview with Rolling Stone, right? And it's no surprise that the Fugees, with that album, The Score, 1996, became a multi-platinum success around the world. 6 Grammy Awards. And why did it work? Because they came out and was like, ooh la la la. Right? It was weird. It didn't sound like anything else that was on the radio. That's what I'm trying to say. It didn't sound like anything else because they took those skills that they thought were weird and they brought them to the table. They stopped trying to be like everybody else. And the history is there. But you have to show it, not tell it. The thing that you're making, you have to show people how it works, what it is, and what contribution is it making to their lives. You might think it's just promos. No, it's not just promos. People, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but people are trying to see something that's going to engage them and tell them why, and it works with the will of men. You familiar with this? Anybody familiar with this? So, this became, of course, an internet sensation. They're just showing how the product works. How does the blender work? Bertha Ben, back in the day, she was just trying to help out her husband because he wasn't making any money. She took that car and she drove it around town with her sons just to show people it works. Because people, of course, are always skeptics. They just need to know that the thing you're trying to sell them works. And often we're afraid to be obvious, to be salespeople, because we oftentimes think, as creatives, I know I'm guilty, of not feeling like a salesperson. When the reality is, we buy what we believe works. You just show me how it works. That's it. And it's all about the needs that arise in our lives. And I want to talk about this because there's a guy named Clayton Christensen, and
he has this theory about jobs. In the same way that we get hired for jobs is the same way that people watch our promos, commercials, spots, all this stuff, and the way that they engage with us. Our promos, our work, has a job. It has a function. He did this study with McDonald's and their shakes, and he discovered that people were buying shakes just so they could have something in their hand, not because they were thirsty. Now, that's not the case all around, but you find out that people need something to hold on their way to work. They stood outside McDonald's and asked me, why'd you do it? And they really had no answer, because sometimes when you ask your customers why, they don't really know why, because they're too busy at work with the kids and things like that. But when they dug deeper into it, it was as simple as, I just need something in my hand. Now, there are people getting married, there are people getting married, maybe they work out, maybe they eat too much fast food, maybe they're bored, maybe they want to be big and powerful, maybe they want to be have a lot of money, hear what you have to say, smile, go on vacation, maybe they're depressed, maybe they have these irrational fears, hopes, dreams, desires. Why do we act like these people aren't real people? The thing, it ends up becoming a 10-second spot. But when we meet people where they are, we have to think about where they are in their life, right? Can't you write from that angle? Where are they? What are they going through? What does their real life look like? And what part do you play in that? They're hiring your promo for a job. They're hiring that promo. And if we start looking at it, it's like, what did he hire that for? To make me feel good, to make me smile, to make me laugh? We have to consider why we hire promos. Because we're hiring your promo for a job. And if you can make me feel good, you can make me smile, you can make me laugh, maybe you want to make me cry, maybe you just want to get my attention so that I tune in. We have to consider that. But I don't want my doctor to be this person, right? This is one thing I want to talk about. I have to get this off my chest, right? Now, all of these things are rational fears. I don't want my doctor to think that. And that's where I think our creative discipline, where we have our advantage, that's our competitive advantage. We can think this way. We can provoke in this way. I don't want my doctor to be trying to get my attention in weird ways. Because that's the difference between us and those other people. Our job is to entertain. It's to entertain. It's not the doctor's job. It's our job, but that's our competitive advantage. But it has to be compelling. It can't be boring. Can't put me to sleep. You gotta think that the old way of thinking has to be pushed out the window. And there has to be somebody, particularly probably in this room, that can be weird enough, confident enough, strong enough, bold enough, to bring that weird thing to the table. What do you bring to the table? I have an actual picture of a table. Because sometimes you have to be little. Maybe you'll remember that table, I hope so. The thing that makes you unique, different, weak, unusual, those things that you thought were your low points are in fact your personal creative competitive advantage. And I'll say all that with the background of memory. You cannot create something that you're not personally attached to. Now, there's things you can work on at work that you're not personally attached to, but sometimes when you create from your heart, from your soul, something that's personal to you, and you start bringing that to the workplace, all of a sudden you start creating things that attach to memory. Now, why is memory so important? The thing about memory is it's very simple. All of us, there's only a couple different things that we care about, right? Love, laughter. There's only a couple different components of this world. And it's all global stuff, human values, the things we care about. It's not something that's rocket science. But when we bring it from our personal lives, we can get personal and it actually resonates with people. We have to start thinking about the weird, the few. And you might be saying, the only thing you're gonna remember from this presentation is me saying weird and few. And that's fine. Because when I wrote this presentation, I was like, you're probably ignoring me right now. But there's going to be a couple things that you're going to remember.
because for 45 minutes, I don't know if I have your attention for that whole time, but I know that if I say something enough, you'll get it. You'll get the point.
Choose right now, right before I end. You have to choose. Let's make a choice right now. Who's ready to make a choice? Just raise your right hand if you can. Come on. Everybody's a follower. Right? Here's the thing. Either you're going to be a status quo protector or you're going to be a non-conformist. You have to decide, am I going to go with the status quo and do what I'm told? Or am I going to be weird, be the weirdo amongst the crowd?
I'm going to say this, and maybe I want to leave you with this. Not yet. I have a quote that's after this. Go with the obvious, right? That's the thing. Go with the obvious. Let's not get too deep about it, right? Oftentimes, we like to sign up for things to be hard. We like to sign up for failure. We just want to make things difficult. And really, let's just go with the obvious, because it turns out that the thing that's the obvious thing is actually the one that we should go with. I have a quote by Maya Angelou. She said, people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. Sometimes, say I have 45 minutes, 50 minutes. Sometimes we have a lot of time. But most times, we only have maybe at least 5 seconds for a spot. I need to know that someone in here is going to be provoked to show up and start creating from a personal angle and get real weird about it.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate LaKire Marion and social media coordinator Christian Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A. Follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack. Follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. Subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.